And here come all of our fabulous ladies who listen to these great podcasts and all the great information. So it is 9:30 here in Las Vegas. And as you guys know, we start on time and we end on time. And I am so thrilled for today's guest. And you guys are going to take so many great notes on this because we have Natasha with us today. And to me, Natasha is the queen of discipline. So no pressure, Natasha. But with that being said, please introduce yourself and tell everybody where you work and what your goal is and how many sales you had last year,
Okay,
please.
thank you, Sabrina. So, thank you for having me on here. I'm very excited to share and be surrounded by amazing women. My name is Natasha Johns. I work for Carpenter Realtors. I've been an agent for 18 years with them, but I've only been full-time for about 6 years. I was a school teacher previous to becoming a full-time real estate agent.
And what city are you in?
Bedford, Indiana, which is about 30 minutes south of Bloomington, Indiana, which a lot of people know, Indiana University, Indiana Hoosiers.
Yeah, that's true. And how many transactions did you close last year?
167 last year.
Wow, how big is your team?
I just have some admin staff, no other agents.
Okay, everybody, I have to confess, I knew that.
That's
So,
why I was smiling at you.
167 last year, and her team is a couple of admin people. Good for you, Natasha. That is amazing. How do you do that? Like, the first question that is part of Q7 is, can you tell us what your average day looks like? And with 167 closed last year, by the way, what is your goal for this year?
200.
Same amount of people on your so-called team?
I am going to add it. I'm going to add in one more transaction coordinator this year.
Good. But you don't have other agents. It's just you who is the main listing and selling person?
Yeah, so I have a couple people in my office that if I'm double booked and there's a new listing, I never want a buyer to lose out. So once in a
Mm-hmm.
while, if I'm double booked, then one of my assistants will call a showing assistant. Someone will just go open the door for them, but I don't let anyone else do my negotiating, go to my closings, go on listing appointments or anything like that for me.
Wow. Okay. So tell us about your average day because there are a whole bunch of people on this call who would like to replicate those results. What do you do?
So I have gotten into a good practice of as soon as my alarm goes off, I don't hit snooze, I get up. So that's usually at 5:30. I will start my morning with just I like to read quotes. So I'll start with some positive quote reading, and then I have my boys up by 6 o'clock. I have them on the school bus by 6:55. I'm out in the barn taking care of my horses till about 7:30, and then I come in, I get myself ready. While I'm getting ready is when I listen to motivational stuff. So I will re-listen to my coaching calls. I'll re-listen to Mike's Monday message. Just any type of good food for my brain while I'm showering and putting on makeup, that is actually my best listening time. I'm a full-blown driver and I'm not always the best listener, but that is what I've discovered for myself is just my quality listening time. So I just try to Zig Ziglar's one that if I'm not listening to Mike, I'm usually listening to Zig Ziglar. So I just bounce between the two. Then I'm getting better about this, but I sometimes get into too much admin stuff and I try to get ahead of everyone and make their days easier. But I've tried to make sure that's cut off by 8, and then I'm on a mastermind or role play. And then by 9, I'm prospecting. All my staff, even my other companies I own, I've told them unless it's literally a 911, don't call me before 10 o'clock. And so that way I get at minimum an hour of prospecting in before my day really starts. And then it goes into closings, listing appointments, showing buyers' houses. And then I try to be clocked out by about 4 o'clock and spend the next couple hours with my boys. And then before bed, I'll clock back in and I'll get caught up on emails and my phone.
So you're a single mom, if I remember correctly.
I am.
Yeah. So you have that responsibility. I didn't know that you had horses. How many horses do you have?
Nine.
Okay, turn around. Do you have a superwoman cape on the back of you or something?
No.
That nine horses, two boys, single mom, and did 167 transactions last year.
Three boys.
Whoa.
Three boys.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is the biggest obstacle that you face, Natasha?
Balance in work and life. I do enjoy my job. I don't like letting people down. I don't really look at it as a job. It's my life. And once I take on a client, they're family to me. So I sometimes do have a hard time. You know, I want to clock out every day at 4, but if there's an emergency, which one of my friends did remind me, there's no real estate emergencies, but everything to me is, because it's a huge, huge investment for them. So when that happens, I don't always shut down. I don't always let things roll off. If I've had an issue with a file, I struggle with sometimes letting that go and then just switching back into mom mode. So it's a constant battle of, you know, I wish I could. Mike just lets things roll off. And I did tell him the other day, I said, one thing I've noticed is the busier I am and the more files I have, I am learning to let things roll off, like, and almost even let giving them 15 or 20 minutes to work out an issue before I jump into it, because a lot of times those issues can be worked out. So I just always want to jump in and save the day all the time. And I'm learning to, I think it's a little bit of micromanaging, and I don't need to do that. I need to, if I'm delegating to people, let them do it. And then if they can't resolve it after a while, then I come in. So I think once I master that, that's when I'll be able to balance this work life thing a little better.
You know, you remind me of something that Mike has said many times, where the response when somebody came to you or to him was, you know, oh my gosh, I have needs. How can I fix it? And the response was, I want you to go and write out two possible solutions for this and then come back and tell me. And generally, the person, as they're writing down the first response or solution, simply said, well, I'll just do that. It's sometimes the drama of an issue that people get caught up in. So that is one of those great pieces of advice Mike has for all of us. Ask the person, what solutions can you come up with?
Yes.
Let them learn to think for themselves. So good for you on that one. So, okay, you said you follow your schedule pretty well, and I bet you do, because you're very disciplined in that. But how do you manage your time? Like you're saying, I think we all heard 1 hour of prospecting. That seems a small number for a big result. Who are you calling, and how efficient are you in your prospecting?
So I have been averaging about 8 hours a week, and
okay.
I will usually prospect on a Saturday or Sunday as well.
Ah.
I call for sell by owners, any hot leads, follow-ups, expireds. And then as soon as I list a property, I do just listed. And then if I have an open house, I call them again. And then once I close, I do just sold calls. So that's, I mean, I'm in an area where we don't have, I mean, I know some other great agents, they tell me they have literally hundreds of expireds. That I'm lucky if I get 6 expireds on a day. That is a busy day for me.
Wow.
So okay. I don't get to work a lot of expireds, but you know, I do hit every day. I hit at minimum expired for sell by owner, any hot leads that have come in from one of my listings or a sign call, and then all my lead follow up. So I hit that at least 6 days a week.
Do you ever struggle at all with calling or with prospecting, or is that just second nature to you?
So I never had a system for prospecting up until about probably 15, 16 months is what I've really fully been prospecting. Before, it was all organic, just as soon as I would pass. I love for sale by owners. I'm a hunter. So as soon as I saw a for sale by owner, I would be barreling out of the car, knocking on their door. So it was very organic. It was everywhere I was at, I was asking who they know looking to buy or sell. I'm loving prospecting now that I have a system in place. So I'm actually in a bad mood. If it's 10 o'clock and I don't have an hour of prospecting in that day, I struggle because I feel like I haven't at all hit what I should be doing that day. And I think in our profession, we don't have to be disciplined because we don't have anyone to be accountable to, but it's such a sad thing because by not being disciplined, we're also not living up to our potential. I had a gentleman call me yesterday asking for some feedback, and there was two of them and they were doing 50 deals a year. And I said, so what are you doing with the rest of your time? I said, I'm not trying to be rude, but what are you doing rest of the time? And it was just one of those things that I was truly curious of. I would be really bored if I was doing 50 deals a year. So I think it's just, if we're disciplined, the sky's the limit.
It's an interesting circle that you go through, because as you just said, you know, really, there's no one to hold us accountable. We can say we want to be accountable, but the bottom line is it's still a choice that you make. And it is having that discipline of saying, I will do my job. That makes me feel good. And then there are the people who are like, but I'm afraid to do my job and I don't want to be held accountable, but then I always feel bad. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that discipline really does give freedom. So, all right. So what is one thing that you do to manage your day that you're always looking at and saying, okay, like obviously your children, that's not optional. You have to get them on the school bus and you have to be home when they come home. And I'm sure that the kids have things that they're involved with as well. So what is your best point of managing your time in your day?
So it's definitely delegation. And I was thinking back at, you know, when did I start really falling in love with delegation? Because I do. And I think when I was in college and I was working for a not-for-profit, I had this task of helping it was a public school, but it was only for handicapped kids. And the school wasn't, as sad as this it was, it wasn't truly handicap accessible. They had a playground that had no handicap accessible equipment on it. And so this not-for-profit took it upon themselves that they were going to get the school system on board of, we would take 9 months, raise $100,000, and build a playground. So I was the lucky one that got to lead up the project. And within about 6 months, we had the $100,000 raised. And what I partnered with another not-for-profit that they had this system of how you plan a day or two, you bring the whole community together, you go in, it was called Kaboom, I think is the name of the not-for-profit. You go in and you build a playground. And I ended up learning a lot from them, actually going to some playground builds. And I brought the whole community together with this model. And we had over 100 volunteers. And I remember someone saying, it looked like just a bunch of little ants. Like they all knew their direction. I put together like 12 different crews. And this crew was building picnic tables. And this crew was digging the holes for the playground. And this crew was painting, just doing kind of a facelift on the school building. And in 2 days, like we had this entire school from the playground to the actual school look transformed. And it transformed my life because it showed me how, if everyone just works together, what can be accomplished in such a short period of time. So it continued. It was such a success. We ended up building a few more playgrounds. And I think it just propelled me where I love being a leader, that I'll get down and I will scrub floors in a building if I have to with my workers. But I also love leading and managing. So I've really tried to delegate. You know, I do have my times more. I shouldn't be out mowing my yard. I've even gotten to the point where I've got a high school boy that he needed a job. He comes and cleans my horse stalls for me, so that at home it's quality time with my boys. I'm not running around trying to do chores. So it's, you know, when people say, how do you do it? I am blessed to be surrounded by amazing teammates that help me by, you know, I have a nanny that comes in and she does laundry and she helps unload the dishwasher, and she'll take one boy and do homework with him while I'm helping the other one. So I can rotate having one-on-one time. So it's not that I'm a superwoman. I don't have a cape. I've just learned to really delegate and trust the people that I'm delegating to, trust that they are doing what they should be.
Okay, so I will speak for me personally. That is my hardest thing to do. And I don't know if anybody else has that feeling as well, that delegating and letting go isn't a challenge for them. So how did you master this? Because it sounds like you're pretty good at delegating.
Well, I think it goes back to the playground project of knowing that there's people better than I am that are going to be more efficient to build a picnic table. If I tried to build a picnic table, it would have been a nightmare. It wouldn't have been put together. I am mechanically not inclined at all. So if I can just prepare getting all their picnic table materials and getting those volunteers in place, so then there was six beautiful picnic tables put together instead of maybe the one that I would have, then it was a win for that school system. And even in my own life, I can't be a good mom if I'm trying to clean horse stalls and keep up with laundry and get my groceries plus keep up with real estate, then I would have no actual quality time. So it got to the point where I'm robbing my kids because I was trying to do everything. And so I wasn't doing either of us justice because I felt guilty not having quality time with them, but then I was having guilty because my oldest son didn't have clean jeans to wear to school. So, you know, I think you've got to realize you're creating a job for someone too. I mean, like my nanny, she just wanted something small. She was an older woman that it's been a win-win for both of us. So I think it's powerful when you can create positions for people that also make your life easier.
I love that thought. Can you say that one again?
I think
Do you remember what you just said? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, when you're creating jobs that help people,
yeah,
but then they're making your life easier and therefore you're being able to do more good with that time you have because we can't get our time back. So I have learned to delegate the things that I don't enjoy or that I'm not the best qualified at. I'm going to delegate that out.
You know, and that is just one of those things of looking at it and saying, yes, there are other people who could do this at least equally, if not better. And the trade-off being that you then have the time for the things that you value the most, your boys, the time, the family time, the quality time. So I'm going to try that one, Natasha. I'll let you know how I do on that delegation mode, because that's always one of my struggles on that. I'm curious, when you got involved with the school and building this playground, was it before you got into real estate?
So it was kind of in conjunction. No, it was before, because I got my real estate license after I graduated college. So that was a college work study job is what that was.
Okay. Because it's interesting to me, you know, I sent out a little video yesterday to our ABF supporters about Mary Rama, who is one of the agents who we've worked with for a long time. She's a broker, actually. And she was doing something for her community that was a fundraiser. And I was just thinking of how important it is to be able to give back and to be part of the community and for people to know that you're involved in something. And then it worked out so great because she was able to also raise money for ABF.
Mm-hmm.
My little plug for ABF.
Yes.
So it's making that difference and doing those things. So that's interesting how you brought those all together and you're learning from those. I assume every once in a while, though, you get overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you handle that? Like, how do you stop yourself from being in overwhelm? What do you do?
So, you know, personally, being a single mom, going through a divorce, that has probably been my most overwhelmed time because I've had to adjust to not having my boys. So I've tried to physically, I spend a lot of time lifting weights and working out anymore. And so I think that's important for women to find whatever it is that stops them from thinking. So I found some things that I'm scared of and I cannot think of anything else while I'm doing them. Very weird things. Like one is riding a reining horse. So I've been taking reining lessons. Birds. I love birds, but when I'm with birds, like domesticated birds, and there's a bird sanctuary around here that I go to, I can't, I'm so focused on them, I don't think of anything else. And then the other option is lifting weights. So those three things, when I'm doing them, my brain shuts out all the other noise. And that's been my escape. And I think that we all need that. And especially women, I think men a lot of times just don't care and they can let things roll off. And I think as a woman and a mom, you can't very often. And so figuring out those things that either scare you or put you out of your comfort zone where you can't think of anything else. I try for 30 minutes to an hour once a day, whether it's after I get the kids to bed, whether it's on my lunch break, I run to the gym. But finding that time to get my heart rate up and to shut everything out, and that has been probably the best antidepressant medicine, anxiety medicine that I could have ever done for myself.
That is interesting because as everybody on this call and anyone who listens to this call generally knows that real estate can be really stressful, especially when the market is doing what it is. As we talked earlier, it's, you know, right now it's coming in spurts for you. It's quiet and then it's super busy, then it's quiet and then it's super busy. So you're always dealing with that pressure of the business and then everything else on top of it. So if you find this physical release for your stress, do you ever get back in the car and go, I'm still stressed? Or does that really just settle you down?
It usually is one of those things that I don't, you know, especially if I'm lifting weights, I'm not going to stop until I've really, and then what I find is once I release that tension, my mind's clear. And then all of a sudden that huge problem, I have a solution for it.
It is interesting how our own mind is our biggest enemy. You know, it can take a little problem and make it humongous, paralyzing even.
Yes.
And then, yeah, I love the fact that, as you say, find an outlet, find a way. And you obviously have done that. So good for you. How do you strengthen your mindset for dealing with all of this stuff? I know you said that you listen to positive things, but do you watch any news? What do you do to strengthen your mindset?
I don't watch the news at all. Zero.
Okay.
I think that, you know, I found that even so step farther, keeping myself healthy where I could keep going, I did those things. And then, you know, I've always tried to stay ahead as far as listening to Zig Ziglar. He even says something about, you know, why would you wait until you're not well to do kind of healthy things? So, you know, I think I've everything from getting plenty of sleep, eating right, working out. But then there was still a missing component until the production retreat, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And real estate, I do feel like, is serving. But I still felt like I wasn't serving, and I couldn't put my finger on why. And I had a lunch with Lucy Ham, who I'm sure everyone knows, and she's just a remarkable woman. And
she truly is.
Yes, she was. And she is. And she said, she told me about, she's been going into the prisons and she just goes into the waiting area and she just talks to people that are out there and just, you know, prays with them, listens to them, but was talking about how fulfilling it was for her. And it hit me that I haven't wanted to admit it because how do I go back to being a teacher? I make more in a month than what I make in a year teaching. Like financially I can't. So I decided after January, I was going to go back into the schools. I still have a valid teaching and administrative degree and license. So I said, can I just come in and start volunteering? I don't care whatever you guys want. If teachers don't want to take them out on recess, if they want me to do lunch duty, if they want me to teach a math lesson, if they want me to put a bulletin board, I'll do whatever. Give me whatever the worst tasks that they are that they don't want to do. And so I started doing that last month and I noticed that it was kind of the cherry on top for me of, I felt like even though I'm taking care of my real estate clients, one passion I have is kids. And it just, so I'm trying about 3 to 6 hours a week going into the schools and just giving back because, again, Zig Ziglar, he says you can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want.
Yeah. That is, you know, it's one of those things, and most of the ladies on this know why we're involved with the Andrea Bocelli Foundation. It was that same thing of having something that's positive in your life, because yes, everything else, you know, we have our jobs, we have our careers, we have our families, we have everything. And yet the bottom line is, did you make a difference today? And that is, I agree with you, Natasha, that is nourishment for your soul. And it's interesting because, you know, we've been laughing about this at the office somewhat. We're not quite to the point of thinking it's funny yet, but we went through the hack, then we went through the cyber attack. Now we're just trying to catch up. But in 10 years from now, we'll look back at this time and go, oh, that was when everything was running smoothly. It's like, no, it wasn't all that smooth, but these are the good old days of the future. So
Yes.
what are we doing with them? What made this day special? Are we doing anything to make it special? And
Right.
I love the fact that you're going into the schools, and I bet your heart is happy for that.
And that's what I told them after my first day. You know, the principal came out and thanked me, and I said, please don't. Like, it was so good for my soul. It was uplifting. I even the next day, I said a few extra from that first time I went and volunteered that next day, like my prospecting that next day was even, and I know it's just because my outlook in life, my voice, everything, it was just more positive. So I think that we have to realize that what we feed our mind is super powerful to everything we do in life.
Yeah. Well, and I'll add on to that, and I think you would agree, is and feed your heart. Have that passion, because everybody's always concerned about balance and all that. There is no balance. This is a crazy, wonderful, exciting, exhausting, all of these words that you can come up with, life. And today is the only March 13th, 2024 that we will ever get. So make it count. Do something with it. Be special about that. And I'm going to say thank you for that reminder of that. And you're right, that would strengthen your mindset as well as make your heart happy. So do you have one piece of advice or something that you could share with our group as to one thing that you feel could help everyone move forward?
Oh, I mean, I think give yourself grace. And it's something that I feel like a hypocrite saying that, but you know, I think as women, we are hard on ourselves, and we are capable and destined to do great things. And we all are, but I feel like a lot of times we don't praise ourselves enough for just how much we are succeeding at, but instead get down on those little roadblocks that, you know, that are part of life. And like you said, we're going to look back on, and it's not a big deal, but because we take life so serious, and even the little details are important to us, you know, we're hard on ourselves over those. And that's, I think it steals some of our joy because of how hard, at least for me, it steals a lot of my joy because of how hard I am on myself at times.
You know, it's interesting that you said, you know, have a little more grace in your life. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, you know, we should all have a new best friend named Grace. And for the rest of us, or for all of us on this call, we would understand that that is the mindset of grace and not beating ourselves up about all the things we didn't do today versus all the things we did do. And yeah, it's amazing because there is so much that is going on. And there are a lot of things that feel like they're insurmountable at the time. On the 11th of March, so Monday, it was the 10th anniversary of the home invasion that Mike and I went through. And Mike, of course, has no recollection of it. He's like, well, why would you worry thinking about that? That's over. But I was going, you know, 10 years, it was paralyzing at the time. So think about anything you're facing. Is that paralyzing or is it overwhelming right now? And know that there's a solution. Think of all the things you guys have survived in your life. Natasha, look at all the stuff you've been through. And yet you don't look at any of it as a crutch or a hindrance. It seems like you embrace it and say, hey, let's go. So I just want to thank you for sharing all of this with us. And I was so looking forward to this exchange, our interview. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
It's the top of the hour. We start on time. We end on time. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Natasha.
Thank you.
We'll see you next month. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.